Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. Welcome everyone to the We Know Show. Today we have Adam Gibson with us. Hey, Adam.
Hi there.
For those that don't know, Adam Gibson is an entrepreneur and business coach. He's a husband and father of three daughters and wanted to do something to protect children from what he could see was coming regarding vaccine mandates. So he founded Parents with Questions. It's a nationwide movement of parents, grandparents, and carers with serious questions about the COVID jab for children. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Pleasure to be here, Renate. Thank you.
I want to start my first question by asking you, what inspired you to start Parents with Questions? Tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be the driving force of this group.
Yeah, still trying to figure that out myself to an extent. Look, you know, I'm a business coach, and I've been involved in reimagining the food system and working around regenerative agriculture and putting really with a mission to put quality food on every table for every kid. Now, that was sort of my big vision. I thought that should be a fundamental basic of every child's right to eat, you know, chemical-free food. It seems like a pretty standard thing, pretty obvious thing to want to have for kids. So that's been my innovating in that space and connecting capital with ideas and business development in that space has been my focus in the last few years. Before that, I was in natural health as an innovator and this sort of disruptive thinker in the business of natural health, so a big coaching group. I used to call myself like the people say, "What are you doing?" I'm kind of like the Anthony Robbins of naturopaths, but So is that kind of that's? I've come from that space in health and well-being and looking after the next generation, looking after the planet with a business view of it. And I just saw coming. It's really got very concerned because I've got a lot of good integrative doctors and naturopaths and good people who really are in the know around health. As close confidants and people I've coached for many years, I could see what was happening with these jab and what was actually not right about it. So the alarm bells rang very early on for me because I was well informed. And as I could see I'm also a marketer, so I could see the playbook, which is, you know, create a problem capitalize on a problem. You don't even have to create it, but you can create or capitalize on the problem. Here's the virus, everyone's going to die. Then we aggravate the problem. We're going to lock you down and we're going to make you suffer for it and, you know, remove you from all the things you love. And then we're going to give you a solution. Guess what? There's a solution. Everything's okay. We'll give you, just take this needle. And then there's the proof. There's the social proof. Everyone's doing the same thing. We'll censor the media so there's only one story. And then it's just this formula that we use in marketing all the time. And I could see it being played out on a very, very clever level. So, and that's not because I'm smart, it's just the business we're in, it's just formulaic. And I guess from that point of view, I thought, well, hang on, they're coming after the kids. And I can say no as an adult, and I'm going to say no to for my kids. And I could see the damages that were being done in the, you know, by people and the unreported adverse reactions and so on. And I kind of looked around and said, well, how do we disrupt this avalanche, you know, this snowball that's coming after us for the children? And I kind of looked around and thought, well, no one else is doing anything. You know, I kept sort of thinking someone else must be doing something here. And I looked around, and I reached out to a few different people. And it wasn't like anyone was doing nothing, but I saw a gap in the market whereby we could disrupt attempt to disrupt the thought process or the cognitive dissonance that is happening for a lot of parents, a lot of us out there in the mainstream narrative, which is, you know, just take this one experimental medicine and or whatever you want to call it, the jab. It's experimental, long-term, unknown, all the rest of all the alarm bells that should normally be going off for people. I mean, I'm old enough to remember thalidomide and stuff. I grew up with kids, you know, so it's nothing new, you know. And I went, hang on, we need to disrupt this and do it quickly. And we got some intel. So we're only about 10 or 11 weeks old. We basically got a bunch of guys, me and a couple of mates, sat around a campfire, you know, what are we going to do? And whinging about the world. And I just thought, I just can't do nothing, so I'm going to do something. And we put a few people together. We all threw some money in a pot and said, let's go just try a legal case and challenge the legal system around and hold some people accountable. And long story short, it evolved into what you see now, which is Parents with Questions. And it's now got, you know, significant funding behind it. We've got, you know, 15, 20,000 people on a database. The website's only been up 2 weeks, got 500,000 hits on it already. And we've really tapped into a vein where people are concerned about what's happening for their kids. The people are asking questions. Even people, you know, happy to take the jab for themselves, whatever reasons, are thinking twice about their kids. And that's where we're at, that cutting edge of that, where people can say, hang on, I'm not comfortable with what's going on. I'm about to make potentially a very, very life-changing, big decision for my kid. What do I need to know in order to make that an informed decision? And we could really see that there was just not that information out there that was available mainstream. So no, there's your long answer to it, you know, but that's how it evolved, really.
It's fascinating how your group encourages asking questions rather than these one-sided rants or assertions. And I think that's a really important approach, because I'm also a marketer, of being curious and asking questions and disrupting the narrative through that asking of questions rather than the saying of whatever it is that you think. And I think this approach is working. Do you feel that it is working?
I certainly hope so. Yeah. You know, I think so, yes. I think there's always a danger. Are we just singing to the choir kind of thing? You know, or preaching to the choir kind of thing? I'm not, but I do believe we are getting traction. And what gives me hope is that there's a lot of people who, you know, I know just on a personal basis, they go, look, yeah, they had the jab very early. They're very happy to take it. They argued all day long for it. But they got young kids similar age to mine and they're going, oh, hang on, I'm not sure about that. So that gives me a lot of hope. Just so sort of that straw poll I get from friends and people I know. And I don't know anyone who's really honestly 100% willing to do this without question.
Yeah.
So as you say, it's really about just creating that, as that curiosity is important. And that, I think that's what we're lacking in the current mainstream overwhelming narrative we're in, is just this, we're not allowed to be curious. Well, they tell us we're not allowed to. We're not encouraged to think for ourselves. We're not encouraged to be outside the box. We've got this cancel culture and this whole thing of, you know, do as you're told and agree with everyone or be ostracized. I mean, when do we get to that? So I'm ranting on A, but I just know that as parents, we've got to recognize we've been making good decisions for our kids since before they were born. You know, like, when do we give that power away to a frigging politician? It just never happened in our life, so we're not going to start now, you know. And that's a realization. It gets me emotional even saying it. And I know every mother knows that, and I think most dads know it too. And we go, well, that's just inherent in us, and that's what we're resonating with, I think, Renat. It's not because we've got some clever thing out there. It's just simply because we're just speaking the truth, which is we know what to do for our kids. We don't need some bastard telling us. Mm-hmm. Certainly not being mandated or pushed upon us or coerced.
Yeah, and I think John Farris recently said in an interview that why would we put our children on the front line to protect the adults? Because we know that kids aren't at risk of this, you know, this particular flu virus. So I think it's obviously the next point I want to raise, and that is that we've got less than, from what I understand, 28 days before this this vaccine rollout for the kids between 5 and 11. Mm. So for the parents that are watching, you know, how do you feel we can best protect our kids? I mean, what's the best course of action right now at this point in time?
Look, at this point, you know, if you're undecided, go and research the hell out of it. It's the first thing. Go and get off Google and all the other censored platforms. Get on to DuckDuckGo and just get off the mainstream. You know, DuckDuckGo is a good one to go to. It's a search engine. But go and see what else is happening out there around the world in terms of injuries. Go and look at the vaccine injuries and see what even the TGA tells us. The official figures, it's 2.1 in every 1,000 adverse reactions. Even that, and by the way, we've got every reason to suspect that's heavily adopted number. It's not the true accurate representation. But assuming that's true, is that a chance you want to take with your kid? Yeah, that's spinning a bullet in a chamber and hoping that, you know, that 2 in 1,000 won't come up. So that's a risk everyone needs to consider. But first, that's number one. Second is, you get to the point that I'm at, which is, and where most of us at, I think now, is like, no, I'm not allowed to swear on this show, I assume, but you know what I'm saying? No effing way. It's just no fucking way is this going to happen to my child, no matter what, right? And at that point, we've got to recognize, I believe, that the coercion points are this. Well, actually, first up, the coercion points they're using against us are comfort, convenience, and complacency. We are so used to being comfortable and hanging on to what we know and sticking to, you know, I've got to pay my mortgage and I need my job and I've got all this crap I need. And I know it's important. It's not crap, but it's, we've got to be okay. Like if someone put a gun to your kid's head and said, either give up everything you own or I pull the trigger, you'd give it up without thinking. And that's the point I think we need to recognize we're at. There is that genuine real risk. That's how I feel about it. And even if it's 2 in 1,000, that's not a risk I'll take with my kids for that. Not when there's no upshot, right? So from that point of view, I will give up every convenience. I don't care if I've got to, you know, go and grow my own food and I can't go to the supermarket. I'll go and live on a farm if I can't. If they take my house off me, I'll go and go bush and live in a tent at a mate's farm out west. If I've already given up half my income because I didn't have to, but I was ethically opposed to someone else's point of, you know, my business partners were doing something I wasn't happy with. So I said, I'm not going to be part of this. And I gave it away. We've just got to get off this level of complacency where she'll be right, mate. Nothing will go wrong. And I'll just see what happens. And I'll just play it by ear is the worst possible place to come from. Because what else is coming now? And this is I can't say this for sure, but I'll put my bottom dollar on it is, I'd say they're going to lock us down before Christmas because that'd be, you know, the ultimate smack in the head for the unvaccinated now released. So I would say something will happen before Christmas on that front. And then my prediction is for January 10th, they're going to roll this stuff out for the kids. It's not mandatory at that point. But when they want to go back to school at the end of January, look out for the coercion, which will be, oh, we've got the whatever variant we've invented this week and it's all going to kill your kids, blah, 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 usual big fear story. And then they come in and say, well, if you don't get vaccinated, we need to have you vaccinated before you're back at school. So as parents, we then are faced with the situation of what the hell do we do? I've got to give up my job to homeschool my kid again, or do I have to send them back, or what, you know, we're stuck. Now, to register for homeschooling, it takes time. It's not a short process. We've pulled our kids out. We're still not registered because it's, takes 3 months or so. So it's very, very real and present danger that if you want to take your kids out of school and they're not quite registered or not approved yet for homeschooling and they're going to mandate a jab for them, you could arguably be in trouble with docs or whoever it is chases up truants and kids who aren't in school. So we've got that as a real inflection point. And I know that sounds dramatic and it's bad news and it doesn't feel like a good thing to think about before Christmas, but hey, as far as I'm concerned, Christmas is cancelled while this is going on. You know, this is far more important, and this is just absolutely we need to be aware of it as parents and be ready, be prepared. Don't be complacent. Give up your conveniences if you have to. Give up comforts. Be ready to do whatever it takes to defend your family. Everyone knows the story how the skinniest, weakest little woman, mother, can pick up a 2-ton car off a kid if the kid's trapped underneath. Everyone knows that story. And we see it playing out. That's what we're all capable of at this point. That's where I'm at. So just pull out all stops. We leave nothing on the table.
Yeah, I'm at the same point, Adam. I've got a 4-year-old boy and I feel you on every front. And the main question that I get is, and for people that are sitting on the fence, is why are they coming for our kids? Like, why? And I'd like to ask you, in terms of the questions, given that your parents have questions, how do you respond to people that say, why are they coming for our kids?
It's a big one. And I'll tell you my honest answer for this. I mean, look, there's money in it. You know, there are another bunch of customers. I don't think the people who are promoting this stuff actually care about people. I think they care about profit and power. Because there's no rational reason to go and vaccinate kids, right? We know, you know, as you said, they were allowed to go to school in the first lockdown because apparently they were immune from it. And I was like, well, if this is such a bad virus, why are they at school? I believe they're trying to knock out the wisdom and the I don't know, there's something in it, and this is just a gut feeling, and it's going to sound weird to some people, but I believe that, you know, they're coming after a lot of the Indigenous people where the true wisdom is held, and the next generation where the level of consciousness is higher than ours, and it's freer, and they hold the hope. You know, they're full of hope, our little kids. They're full of inspiration and intuition, and they're connected. And I think that's what they don't, the powers that be don't seem to like that. They seem to want you to be compliant, do as you're told, you know, follow the rules, we're in control, and suddenly you get a bunch of kids who are free and happy. I think they'd rather have that stifled, you know. And I know that sounds conspiracy and all the rest of it. It's just a gut feeling. I can't prove it. I'm not going to stand up and try and, but I just think that's part of it. They just don't want to see that level of hopefulness and humanity expressed in such a beautiful way, at such a level of consciousness.
Well said. Wow, that really dropped in for me. So, Adam, I guess this begs the question, what happens to the next generation of children, of that wisdom that you spoke about, that purity, if we don't stand up for them now?
Well, I honestly, I don't want to talk about what can happen because it horrifies me. And I think, like I said, I know my kids will be fine, I know yours will, and a lot of people listening to the show, I know you're going to protect your kids. It's just that we got to recognise too that, you know, they'll be living through a generational trauma. That bothers me a lot. You know, I think my kids will be growing up, their childhood would be marked by the amount of friends that have been having heart attacks and all these, you know, outrageous adverse reactions that we're seeing in the adult population already. That's going to be happening to these little kids. So that's what we're dealing with, is the knockout. You know, how many, see, one thing we need to recognize, come back to some brass tacks. I've come out of the health industry, as I said, natural health industry. But one thing I know about Big Pharma is healthy people don't make money, right? Healthy people who take, you know, you might sell them a few vitamins and that, but if they're healthy and they're vibrant, they don't make any money for the medical system. Sick, dead people don't either. But when you're sick and you're chronically ill and you hang around there and you're lingering for years, that's when you make. There's a lot of money goes into keeping people ticking along at that level. And that's arguably what's being created here, is a generation that needs to be hooked up to, you know, drugs and things just to keep them alive. And there's a profit in that. But, you know, and I hate saying that, but this is not new. As I said, I've been in natural health and all my life in that health, wellness. I started in the fitness industry and then I got into the natural health industry, now in regenerative agriculture. And in my lifetime, I'm 51 years old. In my lifetime, when I was born, the chronic disease rate in the Western world was about under 6% in children. You know, it was a rare, rare thing for kids. There was a bit of asthma around. There's all these kind of rare things that used to pop up here and there. But it's now in the US, it's now 56%, where chronic disease of all sorts, everything from obesity to, you know, heart disease to diabetes, and this is kids under 18. Like, you know, little kids getting sick. So this is a chronic disease crisis. It's not new. This has been going on for some time. We've been feeding our kids absolute shit as a Western world for a couple of generations now. Back in the 1990s, when I was in my 20s, they started poisoning the wheat with GMO crops. Everyone thinks, oh, it's GMO crops. What's the big deal? They've just modified the gene thing of the crop, so it's, you know, slightly different. They're modified it so you can spray it with friggin' Roundup. So you see how wheat's grown, and it's like it's belted with Roundup, which is like the most horrible ban in the US as a cancer-causing agent and so on. But that's our food system, and that's what we're feeding our kids in their toast every day. So what I'm getting at is this is not a new phenomenon. It's been going for a long time. The chronic disease crisis has been the real crisis. That's the pandemic, not some bloody virus, which is like the same as last year's flu. The pandemic is the amount of sick and unhealthy and, you know, really horribly unhealthy people, and including our children. This is maybe just an extension of it. So I hope that I'm thoroughly, utterly wrong. I genuinely do. I really do. But I know that even if there's a few percent chance that I'm right, I'll stand and fight. I'll protect. I'll do everything I can to safeguard against this occurring. Even if I'm wrong, I'll still do what I can, because the upshot of doing nothing, as I know what's coming, is it won't be my doing nothing's not an option. I've got to do something, even if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. That makes sense. But.
Absolutely does. And I think I'd love for you to be able to speak into the fact that asking questions right now can be censored, which is just astounds me, to be honest. I know you had hundreds and thousands of people come to your website after you launched it. Maybe talk to us about that and also your social media and the amount of support that you've received from so many alliances. And I'd love for you to talk into that. I think that's really important that you can demonstrate that there's a groundswell. There are parents willing to ask the questions and listen to those that are asking the questions. And I think this is a really important time in our history that we look back and say there were people asking questions. There were parents with questions. And it'll always be known, regardless of what happens. I think it's really important that people understand that asking questions is the most important thing we can do for our communities right now.
Well, look, yeah. You're right. The censoring is unfortunately not surprising, but censored. We've been literally kicked off Instagram twice now. We've restarted and come back just as quick. But you know, it's just amazing. I heard this 2 years ago. I had got guys like Brian Rose from London Real saying he was being censored. And he was so outraged by it. I thought, wow, that's horrible. But you know, imagine living in this now. This is what we've got, and here we are now. It's just normal. It's normalized to the extent our social media team are like, oh, yeah, we've been censored today. We're going to go start again. And I'm like, wow, right? So that's how one-sided the media is. The growth in the conversation has gone nuts. Like, as you said, we get not just celebrities speaking out, but just every time we get people to send in a video to the website to say, you know, I'm asking questions, I'm uncomfortable about this, and I'm just adding to the social proof that says it's okay to ask a question. That's what we want, is to feel it's okay. So every time we do that, it exponentially goes up. Like, we're getting thousands of people subscribing a day. It's going. I'm only 2 weeks old. If I'd had this much success in any business I'd run, I wouldn't be sitting here working from the garage. But you know, it has gone nuts, and it's gone. Not because we're clever. It's just simply just people going, thank God someone's allowed me to ask this, because we're all thinking it. So I guess this is the thing, is, you know, I'm really conscious as a bloke, as a man, that, you know, my grandfathers and my great uncles and generations before me have went and gone to war and literally marched off to war and taken bullets and, you know, got shot down in planes and so on, to give us this freedom to think and to govern ourselves and be sovereign as a people. And we're now so dependent on the government teat and so mollycoddled that we can't just get up and ask a fucking question and say, hey, I'm not sure about this. Like, that's a God-given right. No one took that away from us. We've given that away. All right? We've given that away because, oh, I don't want them to agree with me. I don't want to be seen as a tinfoil hat or an anti-vax. I don't want to be seen as this. Or what if people disagree? Who cares if people disagree with us? That's the point. You know, like, we're allowed to disagree with each other. And we've got to. I'm just so adamant. I get really upset with people sitting on a fence, because I'm like, how can we sit and be silent when this is occurring to us? I always used to look back in history, and I've never understood Nazi Germany, how they allowed that to happen. It's something I've known. I've always felt this for years and years. I'm like, how on earth can you get a nation to that point? Well, the German people that evil that they were allowed this? But I realised the answer is no, they weren't evil. They were just complacent and allowed it to happen the way that this is happening to us now. And I think, and I'm not, everyone says, oh, that's a strong comparison, but I actually think it's a very valid one. We're allowing shit to happen now that we'd never consider 2 years ago. I went to the pharmacy yesterday with my two girls, and they made me wait outside because I wouldn't wear a mask. So they said, you know, I'm wait outside. And then they wanted me to come in and sign something. I said, well, I'm put a mask on to come in. I said, I'm not going to. So I'm standing outside and I got denied service. I'm standing outside like an African in South Africa during apartheid with my two little kids. And there's all these people from the village we live in all walking in with their masks on into the shop, ignoring it, going on. And in the end they said, no, we're not going to serve you then if you won't come in with your mask on. I said, I hope everyone here, I hope you're proud of yourselves. I hope you're proud of this moment. You're just watching discrimination against a 6 and a 7-year-old child, and you all put your frigging masks on. What a fucking pantomime. What a pantomime. And they're all sitting there like, it's today they're off. It's okay today. So sorry to swear, but that was, you know, that's the sort of shit we're buying into now. It's like, come on, people, we're better than this. We are so much better than this as a nation. And this complacency is being weaponized against us. It really has.
That's a really important point, that complacency is being used as a weapon against us. I think, the idea that you can be disobedient and be punished for it, it's quite a strong message that people need to really understand further and critically think about. Bodily autonomy now is being seen as selfish. It just boggles my mind. But, you know, just last weekend, we had a Reclaim the Line, Face the Music rally here at the border of Queensland and New South Wales. And for those of you that don't know, that was actually done on Boundary Street. And Boundary Street is actually really significant because back in the Indigenous times, they couldn't cross the border unless they had a temporary white pass. They couldn't cross Boundary Street unless they had a temporary white pass. And here we are again, and we're all experiencing it together. And I could see you were very emotional because you got up there and you spoke and it was so powerful, Adam. But, you know, I want to know, like, all these people that are listening in right now on this digital, you know, this interview or seeing these things on the screens, I can honestly say that it's a completely different feeling when you're addressing what Adam did, which is thousands of people in a crowd and getting them up on their feet. And this is what's really needed right now. There are so many people out there that are asking questions, but the requirement that's needed is this face-to-face interaction. Come back to community. Come back to being, you know, a local member of community and speaking up. I think this is a really important time to do that because at the same rally this last weekend, you were encouraging the men in our community to rise up. You literally got them on their feet. And you ask them to use their voices, not weapons. And you spoke into what it means to be a man today and how to best stand up and from the heart as a protector. It's obviously not about fighting off lions and hunting, you know, hunting. It's really about standing up for community as a man, as standing up for our families. I thought that was such an important message. And I'd love for you to be able to speak into it so that our audience gets to hear that as well.
Yeah, look. It's just been a reflection of my journey in this because you can see, look behind me, you know, kind of boxing and weightlifting and weapons on the wall and all sorts of stuff. And I kind of love all that thing because I grew up on that. And like a lot of blokes, we grew up thinking that's what a man does when under pressure is we come out fighting. And we, you know, the hero wins through fighting. And I think it's true. It is true. We fight. But the fight looks different because we know that is, you know, this is what's so. There's no one to fight, so I'll just be complacent. Or there's no one obvious to punch, so I'll just do nothing. That's them winning on us. They don't give us an actual target to hit. So we go, well, what can I do? We give up. And what I think as men, we like to have we're doers. We like deeds, you know. We judge ourselves by our actions. And the great historical figures didn't necessarily all fight. They spoke and they stood for something better and they took a strong stance despite all views to the contrary. So I've been watching a lot of, you know, I read a lot of Mandela when I was younger about Mandela's stance and how he did it and Gandhi. And last night I was watching a movie about Martin Luther King and he's sort of just for a bit of G-up and inspiration because I was feeling pretty rattled by a lot of stuff and I do get it that way a lot. But they all have used... not exclusively, but, you know, non-violence is the thing that won in the end. And non-violence in our case isn't really a question. It's more just recognising that there isn't anyone to hit. There's no one to punch. What there is a chance for us to stand up as men and actually disagree with someone, actually have the guts to have a conversation that says, you know what, mate, I'm watching you and your kids and I'm really worried about what's going to happen with our kids with this vaccine. Or whatever it is you're concerned about. I said, how do you feel? You know, are you as concerned as I am? Or have you done the research that I've done? Having those difficult and often, I guess, you know, courageous but also tender conversations is something that as men we're not trained for very well, but we need to learn quickly. And it's really coming from this It's coming from the heart as our primary energy source, and it's a heartfelt exercise. And that sounds like the antithesis of everything I got taught as a boy, you know, from the culture I grew up in. But I know it's actually the most courageous. That's it. For me, that's more courageous than hitting someone or going into a – I know what it's like to step into a boxing ring and get beat up by someone bigger and stronger than me, and it's terrifying. But this is more terrifying sometimes for me to have a heartfelt conversation, say this is what's going on for me, and be vulnerable and be sharing and respectful enough to hear another man's point of view, another person's point of view, and actually interrupt this, you know, the bullshit narrative that goes on at the pub or whatever you're normally used to. It's standing up and going, you know what? No, I'm not gonna sit and listen to someone rubbish someone else, or, you know, discriminate against someone. Like in the pharmacy yesterday, I could have walked away and said nothing, but I thought, no, I'm gonna stand up and say something here. And it took a lot of guts to do it. And I'm not saying I'm a hero for it, but that to me, that's the way I express in front of my children. I want them to see that their dad stands for something and doesn't just walk away like a coward and go, oh, well, I got picked on, I'll go away. So no, I'll just stand up for this. You know, and it's not angry, it wasn't even angry. You know, I was pissed off, but I wasn't threatening anyone or anything. I'm just saying, this is not right. Are you people okay with this? Like that's taking a strong stance. And likewise, ringing a friend up or ringing up someone you know, or facing them face to face, as you said, like eyeballing someone and saying, are you sure you're doing the right thing with this? Because I'm worried about it. Like being the one who initiates that is a gutsy place to come from, I believe, as a bloke. So that's the call to action for men. Be heartfelt, be vulnerable, allow people, like telling someone you're scared for your kids. How many blokes actually admit that? Yeah, that's kind of what people need to hear and connect with.
And we're setting an example for our kids, like you said, when we're showing them how to be courageous and compassionate, but also sovereign, and what health looks like. You know, we've got to create a generation that is resilient, and that's what we do as parents. And I think, you know, something that came from my little one, my I've got a four-year-old, his name's Noah, and I take him to these rallies. A lot of my friends ask me why I would do such a thing. And the other day, right after the rally, the next morning, he said he woke up because Chris had told me my husband's Chris, and he said all of last night he was saying, my body, my choice, Daddy, my body, my choice. And then the next morning I said, what did you say to Daddy last night? He goes, I said, my body, my choice, Mummy. He's 4 years old, and he was surrounded by people who are standing up for his sovereignty. And it is going in deep. It's going in deep to our children, what's happening on the trauma side, but it's also going in deep what's happening on the side of resilience. And I think that's a really important point to make, because your mission is to reach 5.5 million parents by Christmas. So I want to ask you, what does that reaching mean? I mean, how are we going, how does that work? Explain it.
Look, it's got to be a lot more than that, in all honesty, because there's 7.5 million families so in Australia, you know, at a quick search engine. But it's basically an invitation for every single – so we've got social media strategies, and we've got marketing out there, right? So we've raised a fair chunk of cash, and you're going to see some marketing really ramp up in the next few weeks. This is going to get – and this is – I'm saying this. I didn't really put my hand up to be the face of this. I just needed to see it happen. So I'm saying that with a degree of trepidation, because I'm, you know, who knows where it goes. But again, I'm putting this out on the line because I'm not going to leave anything on the table. But this is what everyone else, all of us can do, is have five conversations yourself. Because if we got, I think we did the numbers, we started like about a week ago, we had 8,000 in the database, it's now nearly 20 of people subscribing. They said there's 500,000 people been on the website, and his socials got hundreds of thousands of posts. If everyone had five conversations with people they care about that were, you know, loving, heartfelt, just curious, you know, what if they're wrong about the vaccine? Are you still comfortable with it, giving it to your kid, or would you rather wait until you're sure? That's the conversation we're talking about, right? So it's not a, you stupid idiot, you shouldn't do it. That stuff doesn't work. It's just putting the defenses up for people. But ask you saying, look, you know, I'm really unsure about this, and there's not a lot of data long term. There's none, in fact. You know, are you comfortable? That's the, if five, everyone did that five times, and then we encouraged every one of those people to do it five times, et cetera, Within 4 days, we hit 25 million people with that conversation. So that's social proof, and that's a gentle disruption to the cognitive dissonance and the narrative that we're all being fed. And we all need to have at least that choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So all I'm asking, I mean, if I had my way, I'd say we'd ban this thing tomorrow. But at the very best we can do from this point of view, from our, what's in our power, is to say, I'm going to invite at least curiosity and invite informed choice. Informed consent is the key thing we need to ask for. Yeah. And without information, without two sides of the story, it's not informed consent, it's just coercion. So that's the key thing, is, you know, if you don't have all the information, you can't make an informed consent, an informed choice. So that's the strategy, Renard. This really is just to get, we want everyone out here listening to this, get on the website, subscribe. We've got there's text on the website you can borrow from, you know, just have those gentle conversations. We've even got a page going up hopefully tomorrow with a video series from our in-house psychologist who talks really eloquently about how to have loggerhead type conversations with people who have a different viewpoint to you. So, and he just navigates it beautifully. So that's a courageous move that every single person out there can have and can make. And every time we have a conversation with a family member or a friend or a colleague or even people we just know, you know, from school or whatever, who've got young kids who are maybe at risk, we've got a chance to profoundly impact that child's well-being, potentially their life. But, and if nothing else, you know, have the conversation that allows you to feel empowered and be someone who actually does stand up and say, you know what, I don't buy just everything's being told to me. I actually do question. And if the very least, you might not even get the reaction you want straight away, but you will be inviting in others to think critically for themselves by you doing that as well.
Great. And for those that don't know, what's the website, Adam, and the new Instagram page, and some of the key actions or the very first steps that you want parents to take right now?
So it's parentswithquestions.com.au. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm actually not really on social media. Our team is, though. So you'll find it on Facebook, you'll find it on Telegram, you'll find it on Instagram, Parents with Questions, to get you there. Mm-hmm. And jump on, subscribe. There's more resources being built out daily, but really it links you into the community. We're having regular Zoom catch-ups with leading doctors and professionals from all over the world. Starting next week, we've got Dr. Ian Brighthope, one of Australia's leading the medical specialists in Australia, who's going to speak up the next few days. We've got a whole bunch of celebrities coming on board and talking about their experience. Like already we've had that, but we've got more and more coming on board now. Professionals from all over the country. Geert Vanden Bosch, I think his name is the one of the leading vaccine specialists in the world out of Germany, who has spoken up about this, and he's joining us in the next couple of weeks or so. So we've got that kind of interaction available. Like I said, the resources are there to do a few things. One is to have conversations. So we'll have the psychologists, how to have those conversations, a video series up tomorrow. And we've also got an invitation for everyone to go the next level beyond the conversation, is to become a local activator. So I know a lot of people are really passionate about this, and we want to encourage them to do as much as they can. You can go onto a page there we've got set up. I think it's on the called Local Activators page, but you'll get the link once you join. And it has flyers and posters and things you can download and get printed. Go and stick one under every windscreen wiper at your local school at pickup time. Go and pepper your letterboxes around your region. Go and get active. We'll give you all the resources and things you need to do that. You can get people together and help you. So I think one of the key things is you obviously know this, as you know, having what you did with this rally was incredible. And the way you bring people together is remarkable. If we're lucky, you know, I'm in Northern Rivers near you, and it's, you know, we've kind of got a bit of a community around here that agrees with us, and we've got that. For all the dissent out there, we've got this core group of people we can kind of feel part of something. And I recognise too, there's a lot of people out there who don't have that. You know, they're stuck in Western Sydney or out bush or wherever they are, and they just don't have a supportive community around them. And that is horribly socially isolating, and it's really tough. So for those people, I suggest go and create your own community around this, because I promise you there are people out there who feel the way you do. They are just frightened to speak up, just like you may have been as well. So this is a way to say, you know what, I'm joining Parents' Questions. I can go out and do some letterbox drops. I'm going to put some on the socials. You can put a post up saying, look, I'm in bloody Udin about her or wherever you are, and I want to do get a people together and we'll do something together, as in a letterbox drop together or a catch up and talk about what's going on. That's something everyone can do. So we just get active, be part of this fight, because we've got, as you said, it's not 28 days anymore, it's 26. Mm. It's January 10th. Here's my Amy come to visit us. Hi, Amy. So say hi. We've got a live podcast here. Hey, Sally, I'm busy. Just 1 second, okay? A few more minutes. Stay here with me. Yeah, get active, be part of it with us. You know, this is just, it's a flat structured organization, really. We're just a bunch of parents who got together and decided to do something, as simple as that. Parents, aunties, uncles, a couple of celebrities thrown in, and, you know, we just kind of got started like that. So we're not doing anything that others can't do. We're just a few steps ahead. We've got to jump on this January 10th, which is great, because we were kind of getting ready for November 30. They told us initially it was going to come out. So we went hell for leather getting this thing ready to go, and it turns out now we've bought ourselves a few weeks. So we've got this traction now in a really good time, good place. But it's something everyone can contribute to. Get out there, spread the word, be part of it with us. We're doing it. No one makes any money on it. It's simply to do it. It's 100% for, you know, this crew, yeah, our little ones. That's all it's about.
I love that. Adam, I have one last question for you. It's what I ask every single one of my guests, and that is that if you were to imagine that there was a door and you're going to walk through that door and it's whatever you want to see, it's what you envisage as a result of what you do, Adam, what door do you walk through and what do you see if you were to open that door to, say, 2030?
I love this question. That's a good one. It's a world where our world is dominated, not dominated is the wrong word, but the world is full of people, this generation growing up, maybe our generation growing old peacefully and happily, but whereby there's a level of consciousness that is so much higher than the one we're currently living in, where we understand that fear and control and guilt and shame and all the other stuff they're using to dumb us down and push us around as a community is transcended by, you know, compassion, courage, understanding, respect, sovereignty, and that's for each other. And I know that's idyllic, but I know it's possible. You know, it's not to say this conflict doesn't occur in that, but there's a different level of understanding of what's really important. And we are connected to the land. We are connected to our food source. We're connected to each other. And, you know, technology is used sparingly as a tool, not as a bloody thing to get up in the morning for, like we all currently do now. And it's a world where it sets the stage for the next seven generations to keep building on.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Adam. We've loved having you on. I'm sure everyone that's listening is getting a lot out of it. So thank you. Thank you for everything that you do and what you inspire in our parents, but also what you're creating as a pathway for our children. I see you, brother, and I feel everything that you say, and you know that, and I can't wait to see what we can do together. So well done, Adam.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.